During my hike back down the lane to the house, I tried to think about nothing at all. My first editor used to say that 85% of what goes on in a novelist's head is none of his business, a sentiment I've never believed should be restricted to just writers. So-called higher thought is, by and large, highly overrated. When trouble comes and steps have to be taken, I find it's generally better to just stand aside and let the boys in the basement do their work. That's blue-collar labor down there, non-union guys with lots of muscles and tattoos. Instinct is their specialty, and they refer problems upstairs for actual cogitation only as a last resort. When I tried to call Maddie DeVore, an extremely peculiar thing happened, one that had nothing at all to do with spooks as far as I could tell. Instead of an open line hum when I pushed the cordless's on button, I got silence. Then, just as I was thinking I must have left the phone in the living room or the north bedroom off the hook, I realized it wasn't complete silence. Distant as a radio transmission from deep space, cheerful and quacky as an animated duck, some guy with a fair amount of Brooklyn in his voice was singing. It followed her to school one day, school one day, school one day. It followed her to school one day, which was against the rule. I opened my mouth to ask who was there, but before I could, a woman's voice said, "Hello?" She sounded perplexed and doubtful. "Maddie?" In my confusion, it never occurred to me to call her something more formal, like Ms. or Mrs. DeVore. Nor did it seem odd that I should know who it was based on a single word, even though our only previous conversation had been relatively brief. Maybe the guys in the basement recognized the background music and made the connection to Kyra. "Mr. Noonan?" She sounded more bewildered than ever. The phone never even rang. "I must have picked mine up just as your call was going through," I said. "That happens from time to time." But how many times, I wondered, did it happen when the person calling you was the one you yourself had been planning to call? Maybe quite often, actually. Telepathy or coincidence? Live or Memorex? Either way, it seemed almost magical. I looked across the long, low living room into the glassy eyes of Bunter the Moose and thought, yes, but maybe this is a magic place now. "I suppose," she said doubtfully, "I apologize for calling in the first place. It's a presumption. Your number's unlisted, I know." "Oh, don't worry about that," I thought. "Everyone's got this old number by now. In fact, I'm thinking about putting it in the Yellow Pages." "I got it from your file at the library," she went on, sounding embarrassed. "That's where I work." In the background, Mary had a little lamb had given way to the farmer in the dell. "It's quite all right," I said, "especially since you're the person I was picking up the phone to call." "Me? Why?" "Ladies first." She gave a brief, nervous laugh. "I wanted to invite you to dinner. That is, Kai and I want to invite you to dinner. I should have done it before now. You were awfully good to us the other day. Will you come?" "Yes," I said, with no hesitation at all. "With thanks. We've got some things to talk about anyway." There was a pause. In the background, the mouse was taking the cheese. As a kid, I used to think all these things happened in a vast gray factory called the Hi-Ho Dario. "Maddie? Still there?" "He's dragged you into it, hasn't he? That awful old man." Now her voice sounded not nervous, but somehow dead. "Well, yes and no. You could argue that fate dragged me into it, or coincidence, or God. I wasn't there that morning because of Max DeVore. I was chasing the elusive village burger." She didn't laugh, but her voice brightened a little, and I was glad. People who talk in that dead, affectless way are, by and large, frightened people. Sometimes people who have been outright terrorized. "I'm still sorry for dragging you into my trouble." I had an idea she might start to wonder who was dragging whom after I pitched her on John Storrow, and was glad it was a discussion I wouldn't have to have with her on the phone. In any case, I'd love to come to dinner. When? Would this evening be too soon? Absolutely not. That's wonderful. We have to eat early, though, so my little guy doesn't fall asleep in her dessert. Is 6 okay? Yes. Kai will be excited. We don't have much company. She hasn't been wandering again, has she? I thought she might be offended. Instead, this time she didn't laugh. God, no. All the fuss on Saturday scared her. Now she comes in to tell me if she's switching from the swing in the side yard to the sandbox and back. She talked about you a lot, though. She calls you that tall guy who carrot me. I think she's worried you might be mad at her. Tell her I'm not, I said. No, check that. I'll tell her myself. Can I bring anything? Bottle of wine? She asked, a little doubtfully. Or maybe that's pretentious. I was only going to cook hamburgers on the grill and make potato salad. I'll bring an unpretentious bottle. Thank you, she said. This is sort of exciting. We never have company. I was horrified to find myself on the verge of saying that I thought it was sort of exciting, too, my first date in 4 years and all. Thanks so much for thinking of me. As I hung up, I remembered John Storrow advising me to try and stay visible with her, not to hand over any extra grist for the town gossip mill. If she was barbecuing, we'd probably be out where people could see we had our clothes on, for most of the evening anyway. She would, however, likely do the polite thing at some point and invite me inside. I would then do the polite thing and go. Admire her velvet Elvis painting on the wall, or her commemorative plates from the Franklin Mint, or whatever she had going in the way of trailer decoration. I'd let Kyra show me her bedroom and exclaim with wonder over her excellent assortment of stuffed animals and her favorite dolly, if that was required. There are all sorts of priorities in life. Some your lawyer can understand, but I suspect there are quite a few he can't. Am I handling this right, Bunter? I asked the stuffed moose. Bellow once for yes, twice for no. I was halfway down the hall leading to the north wing, thinking of nothing but a cool shower, when from behind me, very soft, came a brief ring of the bell around Bunter's neck. I stopped, head cocked, my shirt held in one hand, waiting for the bell to ring again. It didn't. After a minute, I went the rest of the way to the bathroom and flipped on the shower. The Lakeview General had a pretty good selection of wines tucked away in one corner. Not much local demand for it, maybe, but the tourists probably bought a fair quantity. And I selected a bottle of Mondavi Red. It was probably a bit more expensive than Maddie had in mind, but I could peel the price sticker off and hope she wouldn't know the difference. There was a line at the checkout, mostly folks with damp T-shirts pulled on over their bathing suits and sand from the public beach sticking to their legs. While I was waiting my turn, my eye happened on the impulse items, which are always stocked near the counter. Among them were several plastic bags labeled Magnabet, each bag showing a cartoon refrigerator with the message "Back Soon" stuck to it. According to the written info, there were two sets of consonants in each Magnabet, plus extra vowels. I grabbed two sets, then added a third, thinking that Maddie DeVore's kid was probably just the right age for such an item.